This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Matthew Price. This is Beyond Today from BBC Radio 4. Every day we ask one big question about one big story. Today, is the truth open source? When we were planning the episode that we put out just before this one, about the shooting down of Flight MH17 and the team from Bellingcat who worked out who fired the missile, we spent a lot of time talking to Elliot Higgins, who set up Bellingcat. And we discovered there was more to talk to him about than just that investigation. Bellingcat's done some amazing investigative work on atrocities carried out in the Syrian war. They were the lot that worked out who the men who carried out the Salisbury poisoning attack were. They're working right now on looking at Saudi Arabia's role in the world's worst conflict zone, Yemen. Elliot and his team have pioneered a new brand of journalism. They say they're still learning as they go, but how they do it is now being picked up by established old-time media organisations like the BBC and the New York Times. Pretty amazing for a guy who dropped out of college, logged on from his living room in Leicester, and started investigating and blogging about what he found.
Open source is basically something that's been done for a long time. In the earliest days of intelligence gathering, it's stuff that was in newspapers, publicly shared information. But what's changed in the last 10 years is now we're sharing a massive amount of information on the internet. We had smartphones that were released, that we had the iPhone, back in 2007, 2008. We had the development of social media apps, more people getting smartphones. So people could immediately share, what was happening in the world around them. First with text, then images, and then videos. We can find that information and we can start drawing conclusions from it. We can also compare it to other information that's now available. Satellite imagery on Google Earth, for example, going back historically for years and years, that is very useful for our work. Reverse image search on various platforms. All kinds of different tools that we can use to search through this information and find new information. And that's been a massive kind of quiet revolution in a way, because this has all been happening and we see it around us. We all use Google Maps to find out where stuff is. We might be going somewhere and we want to look at it, so we look at it on Street View. It's the same tools that you use for that we use in our investigations. And often when you're actually using them yourself, in a way, you're doing an open source investigation. If you want to know where a certain shop is, you're doing an open source investigation of finding that shop. What we're trying to do is find out where missile launches are, where war crimes are taking place, which is, a different scale of things, but it's the same ideas and tools. It's very, very accessible. Anyone with a laptop and a decent internet connection can do this. This also drives the idea that this is a community. This is a collaborative idea. Very early on when I started doing this, because I wasn't from any particular professional background, I didn't have this limitation that so many people have who are from professional backgrounds, where you don't talk to people in other areas of work. You don't have journalists talking to arms union experts in the same way I was. But I saw this happening and I thought, well, I'm talking to, say, Amnesty over here. I'm talking to an arms expert who's really interested in this particular thing they're looking at. Why don't I connect them together and actually have them talk to each other? And that kind of started building the idea of kind of connectiveness and collaboration, which is what the internet is really about.
Often the photos that we take, the videos that we take and post on social media, they're not that good quality. How are you getting all this detail out of them?
Well, you don't even need that much. We did one crowdsourced investigation where ISIS supporters had been asked to post photographs on social media platforms. They asked their European supporters to basically have a piece of paper with the hashtag on and which city they were in Europe. And the idea was, ISIS is everywhere, they're ready to attack at any moment. So some of them took photographs where they would be holding it up against a bush, so you can't geolocate that. Someone else did one inside of newsagents, so you weren't going to be able to do that. But some of them did it with streets in the background and details. In one example, there was someone who was saying he was in Munster in Germany, and in the background you could see an advertising pole. someone figured out very quickly after I basically asked people on Twitter, can you figure out where this is? And someone said, there's a website that actually shows all the advertising locations in Germany. They've mapped it out on Google Maps. So you can go to Munster, select advertising poles, and then you have a map showing the location of every single one. And then you start working through those, looking for the features that are visible in the photograph, which was like a T-junction. So you're looking for a T-junction with traffic lights. And within about 10 minutes, we had the exact location where it was taken. Another game, Paris, took a photograph and caught a partial Suzuki logo in the background. Google Paris Suzuki, you get about 10 results and you just go through Street View one by one till you find a match to it. Again, that was about 10 minutes. And this guy took that photograph from his apartment building as well. So he was sat in his window taking the photograph. There's a guy in Amsterdam who lied about where he was, but we still found him within an hour. And again, that was taken from his own apartment block. So these are ISIS supporters who are like trying to scare everyone. And then the story, the kind of media narrative, rather than being what they want, which is ISIS is everywhere, when ISIS members are stupid because they give away where they live in their, you know, propaganda photograph.
You must have some powerful enemies.
Well, Russia definitely doesn't like us. I mean, we've had all kinds of trouble from Russia with them, you know, trying to hack our emails and say stuff about us that that's not true.
Does changing technology change the way you can find information?
Yeah, absolutely. One report we worked on recently, we were looking at the identity of individuals that were in phone calls published by the Joint Investigation Team and SBU, Ukrainian Intelligence, about MH17. So they put these on YouTube, they were listing their names. Sometimes it was a phone number, sometimes it was a pseudonym, sometimes it was just that they were militant. So we had various amount of information, but in October last year, we had a report ready to publish and we were about to publish it, and a new tool became available called FindFace. And what that allows you to do is search any photograph, reverse image search it on Russia's favorite social media site, VKontakte, which means if you're looking for Russians, you can find their social media profiles. So we took all the photographs we had from this report we were about to publish and put it into that. And it found us all their social media accounts, or their family members' social media accounts where they shared photographs. So all of a sudden, because of this new tool, we had a massive amount of new information about what we were looking into. And then that added another 6 months onto the publication time because we were just overwhelmed by all this new information. But a tool like that can be, you know, very significant. On the other hand, Facebook created something called Graph Search, which allows you to do very advanced searches on social media through Facebook. And it was very good for finding, like, what people in, say, Telford follow the page of the Russian Foreign Ministry. Those kind of more in-depth searches. And they removed it overnight because of the abuse of groups like Cambridge Analytica and other people who are using it to find information that they could use to then target people in a way that they shouldn't be targeting them. But then we lost a very, very important tool for open source investigation. So now there's a conversation between the kind of open source community and Facebook about what they can do to kind of meet halfway with us to see if we can get any of that functionality back. Because although I think everyone acknowledges there's privacy concerns on Facebook, I think everyone must agree with that by now. So we understand they have to take steps, but we feel they took that step without understanding the full impact it would have on investigations into war crimes and violations of international humanitarian law.
Do you get driven, do you think, in a particular direction? So, for instance, you know, MH17, basically, it's evidence being gathered against the Russian state. Yemen, basically, it's evidence being gathered against the Saudi state. Mm. Are you driven by a particular sort of politics?
I mean, generally, I'm against human rights violations and recognise that open source investigation can be used very effectively to investigate those. That's kind of what leads it. That is something that, while it might not be a big driver for me, it's something that is just there, and that if we ignore, it's actually, in a way, makes our work less valuable because we're trying to spread the use of this. We want good examples where it will encourage other people to do this work. You know, I don't want Bellingcat to be the only organization doing this, but it means that we often have to set the example of how it's done first and then find other people who want to do it in the same way. And we've seen this happen with, you know, what's happened with the BBC. BBC Africa Eye team came out of a Bellingcat workshop where they thought they wanted to apply it somewhere, and this was the first opportunity to do it. And they've now done really incredible work using open source investigation. what is frustrating is knowing there's so many stories out there that we could investigate that we just don't have the time to do, like an infinite amount of great stories that could be investigated using these kind of methodologies, that because there's so few investigators, it's not very well resourced as a field at the moment. There's only so much we can do with our time. And if we start splitting ourselves into all these different areas of interest, we just won't achieve anything of significance because we'll never be able to build up the understanding we need to really do a good job of it. But this is why we train. This is why we go out and we spread these ideas and try and get as many people as possible doing it. It's like our MH17 podcast. What I'm trying to do there is reach out to the new true crime audience around podcasts, because MH17 is this great investigative story. It has kind of Russian propaganda. It has interesting investigation techniques. And my hope that is the kind of true crime audience is the audience that will look at the way we do investigations and think, oh, maybe I can do that myself. And if you can tap into that, then you've already tapped into, you know, what I'm sure some really great minds who can do really incredible investigations.
Do you think the truth is open source?
I mean, it helps. It's like, in a way, it can be trusted more because you can share your findings. You can show exactly how you've come to your conclusions. It's not you saying, I have a source who has told me this thing. It's you saying, here's the photograph of what I'm describing to you. And this is why I think this is a thing I claim it is. And then people can discuss that. They can challenge that. And I think that's what makes open source valuable. And you see now with the way governments share information, where the expectation of what the information can offer you is changed. We had with the Iranian or the alleged attacks on the tankers in the Gulf with the Iranian supposedly putting limpet mines on the side of these vessels. There, the information that was presented, at first glance, you might say, oh, well, there's video footage of them doing something to the side of that boat. In a way, it wasn't really clear enough, because you have a community of people now who are ready to pick every single thing apart. So the more you share as a government, the more you're giving those people to actually analyze. And when there's not enough in that information to be 100% clear of what's going on, which I don't think was the case with the US evidence of the Iranian attack, then you wonder why it's not there. Because I can go onto Facebook and find you all kinds of videos showing all kinds of things and all kinds of evidence. Yet if the government can't meet that same standard, then it just looks odd, especially when you're used to seeing this over the last several years with the kind of work we've been doing with Bellingcat.
But in a way, the American government's already done its work. It's put out its images, whether those images are factual, verifiable, whether they are actually what they say they are, and whether they're not, the narrative is out there. Your work takes time. Can open source truth-finding combat narratives that have already been well established in the public mind over several months?
It's a hard one to judge. I mean, there is, you can observe some changes of behavior. One thing I've noticed recently is there was a time period where the Russian government or some representative would give a press conference on MH17 or chemical weapons attacks. And you'd have journalists turn up, you know, Western journalists turning up, and they'll do something with AP or, you know, one of the wire services or maybe their paper, and then write it up, and people turn up and actually watch these things. Now the Russians seem to be giving a lot of press conferences where people just don't bother even turning up anymore. And I think it's because they know they're just going to be lied to. And it's not even a matter of opinion now. It's a matter of fact that Russian press conferences are just usually a series of lies and deceptions.
So, do you worry about a future where those who want to could put out open source material to be discovered by groups like yours, which is just factually incorrect?
The thing with any open source material is it exists in a network of information. So if you were to put out false information, we would investigate it like any other piece of open source information. And we would be looking at where the accounts it was shared on. You know, what's the history of these accounts? That's usually a good indicator of something suspicious happening. We would look at the details inside the videos, and does it actually make sense? You know, we'd look at documents and say, are these documents real? We've had stuff shared with us before that we've not believed is real because it was so extraordinary, and then we've spent a very, very long time investigating that to make sure it couldn't be any kind of fake, or, you know, we've had that several times, and every time we are able to establish whether or not it's real or not.
What's your passing thought to people who are thinking about how can they spot the fakes?
I would say just give it a go. I mean, there's everything we've got on Bellingcat telling you how to do investigations. There's a whole community of people online that you can discover. And just give it a go. I mean, you don't have to make a massive revelation in every single video you geolocate, but go through the process of geolocating a video, convince yourself you're right, and then do what I did. Start maybe a Blogspot, you know, blog or wherever you want to go, and just write it up. You don't have to share it with people, but just going through the process of writing it up will make you think, okay, have I actually made my case? And then imagine what a bunch of trolls on Twitter would say about it to attack your work, like every ridiculous argument you can think of, and try to address those arguments for your work as well. Because I found, for me, one of the best things for sharpening your skills was arguing with trolls, because they will make every argument they can imagine. And if you take each one of those and try and break it down and take it seriously, you will learn a lot more about the thing you're investigating.
Thanks to Elliot Higgins. Bellingcat have actually put out their own podcast series on their search for the truth on MH17. You can find it on the Bellingcat website. And you can find us on the BBC Sounds app. If you download that and subscribe to Beyond Today, you'll find our episode about MH17, as well as lots of other good stuff. Thanks for all your comments. You can use the hashtag Beyond Today. Duncan Barber produced today. Nico Rofast mixed. Harriet Noble is the editor. Thanks for listening. See you.
Sorry to interrupt your content consumption, but can I quickly suggest a podcast you might like? It's called Grown Up Land. Every week, comedian Heidi Regan, podcaster Ned Sedgwick, if that is even a job, Syrian Dreamboat, Steve Alley, and me, comedian Sophie Duca, are joined by a brilliant guest to discuss the bewildering pursuit of adulthood. We talk sex, jobs, rejection, jealousy, sex, all with help from BBC Radio 4. That's the Grown Up Land podcast. Make sure you subscribe on BBC Sounds.